Ramsey TV.
Right, as I promised you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to delve deeper into the inner life of my special guest, Mark Haukes, who is visiting from Virginia via Ireland, lived there for a year, via Seattle, Washington, where I met him. How do you like Florida so far?
A little bit too warm for my taste.
Oh, we got a lightweight here, but that's okay.
I almost died today in the near the quiet park.
Oh, yeah, the quiet park, the cemetery out here. Yeah, Mark wanted to go get some groceries, and I said, well, I'll be happy to drive you there and drop you off. No, I want a nice walk, he says. Right?
Yes, and I didn't take a cell phone, and I'm directionally challenged.
Yeah, he didn't take a cell phone. He's directionally challenged. So about an hour went by. No, more than an hour. I went for a run. I took a shower. Then I was doing some things, and I said, Mark should have been back by now. Something tells me the dude is lost. So I went out on a rescue mission, and I found you walking next to the cemetery in the wrong direction, carrying like 18 pounds of grocery bags. Is that about?
Yes, and I think there's a metaphor lurking here.
Oh, yeah, what's the metaphor?
Well, about being rescued from the death cult.
Oh, yes, yes. Which brings us to the topic at hand. By the way, I'm Martin Zander. This is Mark Haukes. Fellow believer, your fellow believer, and I know you love it when I bring guests on the show because it's nice to know that somebody else in the world believes the way you do, and we all came to this truth by a different route. So I want to learn, and our viewers want to learn what your route was. So
it was pretty rough.
Yeah, you had a rough route. We ended the last show. We talked about the accident that you had. So I want to hear that in your own words, but not yet, because what I want to find out, first of all, is your spiritual background. I think you told me that you went through the religious mill. You went through a lot of denominations. God took you through a lot. So.
Exactly. I mean, you could summarize it in a phrase of the insanity of Christianity.
Hey, that rhymes. Why have not I ever thought of that?
Well, I think I tossed that phrase out to you in Vancouver, Washington, but I didn't think you picked it up. So I still
No, I didn't. To remind everyone, I met Mark in Vancouver in 2014, Vancouver, Washington, and that was in 2014.
Yes.
And you called yourself the Pirate at that time, and I've affectionately known you as the Pirate ever since.
That's what little kids call me when they're 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. So the moniker has stuck.
It's stuck.
Super glue.
And you've owned it. You've owned it. That's good. That's a good thing.
I just have to sail the high seas of the of the gospel, wielding my sword and raiding where I can.
Yeah, you need a scarf too, like tie around your head, one of those scarves, you know, and sword.
Yeah.
Then you have.
I'm not in full costume right now.
No, you're not. Okay, you're not in full costume. Good. Okay, that'd be next time. I want to see you in full costume. So, tell me a little bit about your religious background.
Well, in a nutshell, and this is a rather large nut, but I'll try to compress it as much as possible. I was. From the size of an infant, I was raised in the Lutheran Church, and I was sprinkled and catechized. And
catechized. I've never heard that used as a verb.
Yeah, no, that's what they call catechism.
Yeah, catechism, but that's the noun. You use it as a verb. That's breakthrough.
That's what we talked about, being catechized. And then being confirmed, and I was an acolyte altar boy at times, lighting the candles.
Oh, you lit the candles, wow.
Yeah. And I also was the played the part of one of the shepherds in a Christmas pageant.
I had no idea, my friend.
At 8 years old. I mean, I was deep in the system. And then I moved over at age 14, went to the opposite end of the spectrum with the Jesus People movement.
Oh, really? So were you, describe yourself as a hippie? Because I think the hippies were the ones that joined that. I can't picture you as a hippie.
No, I wasn't a hippie, but I mean, there were hippies among them. It was a storefront outfit. I mean, there are a lot of people on the West Coast that probably remember the Jesus People movement.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's when Jesus Christ Superstar and Godspell and Jesus was popular for a year or two.
Jesus was popular for a year or two. Then his poor man, his popularity wanes. And
I was on that tells you Lutheran Church, the Frozen Chosen, and the Wild Bunch with the Jesus People movement. I've been in Assembly of God churches, Baptist churches, Presbyterian churches. I heard Billy Graham preach in San Francisco. I heard David Wilkerson preach in New York City. I've heard Benny Hinn, Jack Hayford, some of the...
Well, did you have the Pope over for dinner ever?
hardly, but I'm just giving you a flavor of all the pinball machine I was in. And it was getting pretty crazy. And I've been to Bethel Church in Reading with the prophetic movement and been all points in between. And you name it, I've probably been there, have the t-shirt, I own the souvenir stand, and it's been a wild ride, believe me. Man. I mean, I know it from the inside out.
I'll say you do. Out of all my guests I've ever had on the show, I say you have the most eclectic background. Like you have been everywhere.
Well, and Martin, the way I look at it is God's given me an inside tour. It's there's the film, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I was in there, believe me. I mean, it's when a person doesn't understand the gospel of Paul and what grace really amounts to and what our hope and expectation are, it is crazy. And I think there are a lot of people who have just said they turned their backs on God or the God they perceive to be the real God and said, if this is what it's all about, then they'll go be a Buddhist or a New Ager. Or, in one sense, I don't blame them.
Right. They're, as I've always said, they're not even getting the true God. They're not seeing the true God. So you must have come to that point at some time during your walk. But why do you think you bounced around to all these different corners of the cuckoo's nest?
Well, I mean, can't we rely on Romans 11:36? All things are out of God.
Yeah, all things are out of God. But did you find something dissatisfying about every different denomination you were in that made you, well, maybe this next one will have the answers?
Well, I felt myself being, I felt a little bit like I was on a pool table and being kind of, popped, from side to side. And, part of it was, my decision, so to speak. But, and then I went to Bible college and graduated from there.
Oh, you actually graduated.
Yeah. And then that was, I was part of a massive church split. And I saw a Christian Civil War up close and ugly. And
you are battle scarred.
Yeah, believe me. I mean, I don't know how I survived with really becoming serious. I don't know how I survived intact. I mean, it's so wild.
No, it is a miracle that you survived intact. Most people don't come out of that. I mean, you were so deep into it. I would have to say that, like the Apostle Paul, it took a miracle to bring you out.
Well, I'm not sure if it was a miracle or whether it was an accident, namely the accident that left me as a pirate.
Okay, tell us about the accident that left you as a pirate and what part that had in your spiritual walk. Did God use that?
I had... I believe that I was moving in a direction where, of all things, I was beginning a small church fellowship. And long story short, I was working as a part-time helper for UPS during the Christmas rush in November, December of 2011. And at the end of a work day, we had dual system failure of the brakes and the electronic system. Went down a 9% grade hill and smashed into a tree.
Hey.
And my head went through the windshield, and Martin has seen the photo.
Can we show the, can we show the photo? Like, I will give people 5-second warning if they don't want to see it. I'll just put it in later.
Oh, okay.
If it's okay with you. Or would you rather people not see the photo? It's a gruesome photo. This man was left for dead, basically.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I had 41 separate injuries, including dissected left internal carotid artery, which, as my surgeon, Joseph Gross, said, he said, "Mark, you're a walking miracle. Normally, in almost all cases, that's fatal."
Cairo 7 investigates. A UPS delivery truck flies out of control in a busy neighborhood.
Both of us were rather terror-stricken.
Now, Cairo 7 investigates if a new starter system installed to save about 2 seconds per stop failed. Has the shipping giant's obsession with efficiency gone too far? A Cairo 7 investigation into a near-fatal United Parcel Service accident raises new questions about the safety of some of those big brown trucks nationwide.
UPS went to court to stop investigative reporter Chris Holsney from acquiring certain evidence tied to truck maintenance, but that didn't work. UPS is converting its truck fleet to operate without traditional keys. Drivers hit a remote sensor like this one and then start the truck by hitting a button on the dash twice. UPS hopes to save millions of dollars in time efficiency, but you're about to meet a package delivery man who says glitches in the system are putting both drivers and the public in danger.
Pastor Mark Hawkes was working part-time delivering Christmastime packages for UPS when the truck he was riding in failed to start.
All of a sudden, we're rushing down the hill with great speed.
A series of mechanical problems ensued, with the engine quiet, the power brakes, and steering faded.
I seem to recall myself praying.
The parking brake was no match for the heavy truck's momentum on this steep neighborhood street. It careened out of control.
My next memory is, smashing into something. I was in great pain. I knew that, something horrible had happened.
9 months later, Hawkes is learning to live with a fused spine, blind left eye, and constant pain in his disabled hand, shoulder, and leg.
Excellent.
When Cairo 7 asked UPS to explain the accident and whether its new retrofitted keyless ignition system might have played a factor, we received an email stating, "All mechanical and electrical functions of the package car were found to be in good working order." So, how did this happen, and could it have been prevented? Listen to what Hawkes says occurred several hours before the accident.
The alarm of some sort went off in the cab, but we were given earplugs, which we used at times to try to gut it out and deliver the packages.
Handed earplugs by UPS and told to gut it out until after the shift. Accident scene photos seem to back up that claim.
You've seen the documents. Can you tell us what caused the accident?
I can't.
Eric Gillette is an attorney hired by UPS. Part of his job to stop Cairo 7 from seeing the completed Federal Way Police Department accident case file.
The supervisor told him to gut it out, gave him some earplugs.
I can't speak to that either. I'm not familiar with that investigation.
UPS might have a bigger problem than a mechanical malfunction with just one of its smashed trucks. Drivers tell Cairo 7 the new keyless ignition system has plenty of quirks, issues that make them feel unsafe. Teamsters Local 174 listed some of the safety issues in this never-before-released letter to Labor and Industries. Cars lurch and move forward significantly when starting. Engine shuts off while driving. There is no power to brake system. And clutch safety system disabled, allowing cars to start in gear without depressed clutch. Here's an example of that, shot with a cell phone by a local UPS delivery man. He's standing on the passenger side.
Push it once, push it twice.
And starts the truck without being in the seat to push in the clutch and the brake.
Is this just the tip of the iceberg, a single accident? Or is this something that's more systemic?
Huckus's attorney, David Benninger, has not yet filed a lawsuit, saying he first wants to ferret out potential mechanical safety issues with the entire UPS fleet.
The more we seem to look, the more we seem to find, and the bigger the concerns or the larger the red flag is for us that this isn't just an isolated problem.
So far, UPS appears to be downplaying drivers' fears, something we're told is reflected in this internal safety complaint. Turned in 3 months prior to the Huckus accident, a driver writes, "Keyless system will allow car to start without clutch being engaged." UPS's response? Yes, almost every vehicle that has a clutch will have this problem. Vehicle okay to operate.
The individual worker is expendable.
Huckus hopes his accident forces UPS to do a better job factoring in how new money-saving efficiencies might affect both employee and public safety.
You know, maybe it'll help prevent this kind of a horrible accident from recurring, and also that it may empower certain ones to come out of the shadows and speak the truth.
The Department of Labor and Industries won't release its investigative files to us regarding the Teamsters' complaint of the new keyless ignition system, but we do know this, that UPS was not cited for any safety violations.
It's almost remarkable Mr. Huckus even survived that accident when you see those pictures. Chris, this isn't the first time that UPS has run into complaints about the safety of their trucks.
No, not at all. Last year, the New York Attorney General collected a $1.3 million penalty from UPS for allowing trucks with rotted and decaying frames back onto the roads.
Wow. All right, Chris, thank you.
Wow, and this guy was an expert in his field on that, and he had never seen anything like your injury and somebody survive it.
He had been in the field for over 30 years. He said, Mark, and these are his words, in 30 years of practice, I haven't seen a case as bad as yours because every bone in my face was fractured. He said it's like someone rolled a bomb into your face and exploded. Wow. And I had to go through, I think, 6 or 7 surgeries in the space of about 2 weeks. And his surgery on my face, putting everything back together, took over 15 hours.
I mean, this guy is a genius because your face looks great.
No, he...
I mean, really, you don't... And we're not looking at you except for the patch, of course.
No, he was the Michael Jordan of craniofacial surgeons in the world. And we talk about... And what that taught me is that to have that accident occur where it did, and here was the number one surgeon who could do the, you might say, the impossible. I mean... God is behind it.
Yeah, but at the time that happened, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't realize that all was of God. You hadn't come to that truth yet.
No, so
I mean, that wasn't a comforting truth at the time.
It was not a comforting truth. I thought, what in the world has happened to me? And it was very dark there for, you know, the 2012, very dark year.
I think we said yesterday, you told us that you were in a medically induced coma for over 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks, and you know, I suffered nightmares. And at that time, I subscribed rather reluctantly, but I subscribed to the doctrine of eternal torment.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very vivid dream or nightmare, during that time, I was being, you know, I had this tribunal was essentially condemning me to hell. I mean, it was so horrific. So I was going through this stuff on the outside, and they're trying to keep me alive. And on the inside, I'm I would wish it on no one. Horrible. But it was a fruit of the poisonous doctrine that I've been fed my entire life. I didn't know there was any other option.
And you took it seriously because you believed the word of God and you thought that's what the word of God said. And so you internalized it and you thought it was real. Thus these nightmares you had.
Yeah, exactly.
So I remember you telling me that your wife came in the emergency room, was it? And they thought, they basically told her, say goodbye to your husband. I mean, that chokes me up just to think about that.
It was basically, if you can imagine it, putting her hand in my hand. I was drenched in blood and in spasms. That's the only way to describe it. I don't recall any of this. It's just what I was told.
Right. Well, that's one of the mercies of God, that you don't remember any of it.
Exactly.
So what's the first thing you thought of when you came out of this coma and you realized you were going to live? Were you upset at God, or what was the next spiritual move?
The next spiritual move was, what happened? had I made the wrong move somehow, and I had incurred God's severe displeasure.
Yeah.
And where do I go from here? I mean, it was psychologically and spiritually, it was I was undone.
Well, you would naturally have that thought, like, what did I do to deserve this? Because that was your training. All your training told you that if something bad happens, then you're a sinner. That's the Job syndrome, right? His friends,
exactly.
Well, you must have done some terrible thing.
Well, and there were a few that kind of joined in that chorus.
Oh, God. Nothing like friends when the going's tough, right?
Yeah.
Just like Job's friends, right? I.e. friends in air quotes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've had to learn a lot of things the hard way. And it was a Job trial that took me down to the bottom of the sea.
What was the beginning of coming back up out of the sea?
That's a great question. I think my wife was a saving grace in all of this, and she was it's hard to extol in words how loving and kind she was. And all men should be blessed to have a spouse or a wife as wonderful as she was at that time.
God bless her.
And what was a turning point? It was, I began to, having been up close and personal with death, it really sent me down a road of, what is death? And what is God's plan? I mean, it really laser focused my attention on the big questions.
Yeah.
And it wasn't at anyone's prodding. It was just like I was painted into the corner by God, as I look back on it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to grapple with things, and then I wasn't they weren't even sure if they were going to save my right eye, so I had goop in my right eye, and so that left me listening to YouTube. And then I began listening to YouTubes about annihilationism, and I thought, that sounds better than eternal torment.
That's a step in the right direction, oddly to say, kind of.
And so, this was over a period of several months, and so I became more and more convinced annihilationist. I thought, okay, well, at least people aren't being tormented forever.
Right.
And then I went to a small church with a pastor by a friend of mine, and I was browsing some of the literature, and I put two and two together, and the thought came to me, they don't believe in eternal torment. They believe in this thing called the salvation of all.
This was, where did you find this? In a church?
In a church, a small, small, small
It must have
church.
Been small, small, small. How many smalls do you want to use in front of that?
We're talking about maybe 40 or 50 individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they had some literature in the back. And
I thought, wow, what kind of cult am I in?
Yeah. Little did you know you had landed on the mother load of truth. So, okay, so you had never thought of that thought before.
I'd never entertained it.
No.
I'd never heard of it before. And even though if I would have done a close reading of the New Testament, I should have come across that. In my master's program at Trinity Western University, I did come across some verses in Revelation that seemed to point in a direction where something was not completely in accord with eternal torment. So that was the opening foray as far as beginning to doubt that that's what...
That's strange that you found that in the book of Revelation. You saw some kind of light in that book. That'd be the last book you would expect. Do you happen to remember what passage you were in? Just personal curiosity.
Yeah, Revelation 5, where it talks about all the creatures praising God and the Lamb.
Huh, wow.
And
interesting.
And things.
Yeah. Why would they be praising him if he was a total foul up in the salvation department and ended up losing most of his creation?
Yeah. And so scriptures such as that, and then it talks about all nations bringing their glory into the city.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they were all in torment. So I mean, there were things that I could not sift through. But the real turnabout came when the pastor was gone. Particular week, as I recall, there was an individual there who said, and I rather sheepishly came up and said, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys don't believe in eternal torment. And he said, well, Mark, what is it about 1 Corinthians 15:22 that you don't understand?
I like this as guy. I don't even know him. I like this guy.
As in all, as in his art. As in Adam, all are dying, so in all in Christ shall be made alive. And it hit me like a Mike Tyson punch. I was sprawled out over the canvas, so to speak. I had no response. It just like that.
Wow.
And so that began digging into the scriptures to see whether these things be so. The Berean attitude.
Yeah, good.
And then I began to become more confident in that. I was doing my own research, and then lo and behold, during a Google search, you popped up.
Lo and behold.
Yeah, and found out that you were teaching down in Vancouver, and so that's when I first met you at the conference. And then during the conference, I remember you were talking about no free will. I'm thinking, how crazy does this thing get? I mean, no free will. And you were sitting behind me, and I said, what is it about free will that's so bad? Well, it's the word free.
Oh, did you actually ask me that question? I don't remember that. I was sitting behind you during, you said, what's so bad about free will?
Yeah, you said, it's the word free. And
that was a good answer.
Yeah. And so that was my first introduction Martin. Then he told me that he's starting Revelation series and got plugged into a lot of videos, and really has been transformative in getting to know the truth. And I do want to say thank you on behalf of not only me, but all the others in the audience who have benefited from your labors.
Thank you.
Because it's knowing about the two gospels and the plan of the eons and the salvation of all, these things are not widely known. And to know them is to be liberated.
Yes, for sure. You've experienced it firsthand. And I thank you for sharing that with our audience. Since Mark's been here, he spent a lot of time in my room at the desk writing. So I didn't realize you were a writer until this trip. In fact, I haven't seen you since 2014, but I've been really happy to have you here for 4 days. And I'm thrilled that you're writing something in there. I don't know what it is yet, but he's spending hours in my room writing something.
Well, I can share one thing. I have rewritten with audacity, some would say, a poem by Robert Frost. But I've cast it.
That is a daring move, my friend. Frost's not good enough for you, huh?
I don't know if that's going to get me in trouble, but it's the poem that people know as
The Road Less Traveled
The
By.
The Road Less Traveled.
I remember that. I was forced to read that in high school. I think it was one of the nuns there. Sister Angela, yeah. She made us read Robert Frost. Now I know why, because I'm going to hear you.
Yeah, it's The Road Not Taken.
The Road Not Taken. Okay. Sorry, Sister Angela.
As I was thinking about, it's not too long, so I've retitled it Roads, and I talk about my journey and the roads that I've had to have faced and where it's led me. So it goes like this. Two roads converged in a sunny wood, and for so long I had traveled both in one odyssey with staff and hood. I looked down both as far as I could to where they curved round the undergrowth. Then took machete as man may dare, for both old roads had a fading fame. Both had leafy colonnade, no glare. Through the thicket none passes there, but vistas await, though thorn will maim. Both roads I chose to equally slay by leaving no step on road so black. Oh, I kept neither for another day. Yet knowing how people need a way, I doubled effort with blade to hack. I shall be telling this tale on high, sometime eons and eons hence. Two roads converged in a wood, and I hacked away. Most thought is lie, that God saved all, gives glories dense. And the two roads, we're, you know, basically talking about annihilationism and eternal torment, and how those aren't true, and they aren't the only options. And so,
yes, people think they are the only option. It's interesting. I like the hacked. You hacked through.
Yeah.
Was that Frost's word or was that yours? I hacked away. Most thought is lie. Is that the?
No,
you put that one in there.
That's
I like that hacked because it kind of like the search for the truth is.
It is.
Is a hack job sometimes, right?
It is.
It's never pretty.
No, it can be ugly.
It can be ugly. Well, listen, before you leave, I hope to do another video with my friend here. We will see how that goes, Mark the Pirate. All I know is it's been a pleasure having you here, and I know Manfred has enjoyed your fellowship as well. Maybe we'll hear from you again before you leave. I hope so, but in the meantime, thanks for...
Thank you, Martin.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for coming here, and you've blessed our audience because they love hearing people's stories.
I know this may... If I may share one part, it may be a little mind-blowing to some people, and some people may just kind of dismiss it out of hand, but I do believe that God does things that are beyond the normal scope of things, and that they're called miracles. And two things that I wanted to point out is, you know, the dissected carotid artery, Dr. Gruss said, normally that kills people. And then the neurologist, when we looked at the x-rays, he said, it's healed. We don't need to do surgery.
It's healed, they said. It's healed.
Yeah. And then 2 days after the accident, when I was in a drug-induced coma, my wife and two friends were there praying for me. And one of my friends opened his eyes and saw two angels, about 7 feet in height, with white robes and a golden sash around their waist and kind of sparkling in appearance. And one looked at me as I'm all hooked up to all these tubes. The other looked at my friend, just eyeball to eyeball like that, and flashed a beautiful smile, and then they disappeared. So to indicate, don't worry, be at peace, we're watching over Mark, and everything is under control. And so I know that, and that may sound wild to some people, but I know many, many credible stories, maybe some of them that I've I've read about or have spoken to people who have no benefit in telling the story. I believe God spared my life, and I'm glad that he has, because now I know more of what the true gospel is all about, and being a member of the body of Christ. And it's, in one sense, if people can receive this, the accident was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow, that takes great spiritual insight to be able to say that. Thanks again for your testimony. Hope to hear from you before you leave. And thank you for sharing with our audience. God bless all of you. And I will be back. And so will this guy.
Okay.
God bless you all. Thank you.